Hi, everyone. Welcome to the Boomer Next podcast, where today we're going to start the music portion of our podcast. I am the Boomer.
I'm X.
And here we are.
Here we are.
Number two.
Number two. The big numero uno.
This one, we're going to start talking about music, Brian, and I'm going to be really, really frank with you on this.
Uh-oh.
I know. You're going to have to pretty much carry the mantle.
Am I going to have to talk this time?
you're going to have to pretty much... unless you want to hear me talk about something I don't know. Music is not my thing. It never has. I think I don't know. I may have told you back in the day when we were first deciding whether we were going to talk about the music portion of the podcast. I'm the guy that, remember last time we talked about me being in parochial school? Well, music we had every day, 1 hour every day, whether we wanted it or not. And I didn't want it. But in addition to that, we also had to go to Mass every day, and we had to sing, which I didn't want to do. The nuns tried to teach me the scale with her little harp or whatever you call it, the do re.
The little flute?
No, it was a thing she blew into, and it was round, and it was the do re mi fa so la ti da. Okay.
It was called a recorder.
Okay, well, whatever. I don't even know that. Okay, so it was a recorder. And I remember her getting on about the fourth attempt, and I may have gotten the do and the re, okay. But once we got to me, it was horrible. And I remember her just shaking her head and walking away. The next time I talked to her about music, she goes, John, it's okay. What we want you to do is we want you to read the words silently or sing the words silently to yourself when you're in the choir.
Lip sync, basically.
Yeah.
You were the Amelia.
I was the original. Yeah. I was the original Catholic boy lip syncer.
Okay.
And so, when it comes to that, now that's not to say that I hate music. I love music. I just don't consider myself any sort of aficionado when it comes to it. My first memory of music is as a family in the '60s. On the black and white TV, I remember that Lawrence Welk was on Saturday night. Mm-hmm. And I remember everybody would sit around the TV and he would do his thing. And I remember there was a couple of hits, was a variety acts. There was a Bobby and a Sissy, and there was, you know, some other guy.
The one, the two.
And
I used to watch it with my grandparents every weekend.
Yeah. And it was a Saturday night fair, and, you know, everybody sat around and acted like they enjoyed it. Maybe people did. The one thing I do remember is the Lennon sisters were on there, and they were hot.
Okay. So you took some of it in.
Yeah. I did look forward to seeing, and I think Janet, see, the fact that I even remember that, you know, 60 years later.
Right.
Janet Lennon was a hottie.
I have no idea who that is.
I know. And I understand that.
Lennon.
Ellie, just like John
Lennon. Just like John Lennon. Okay.
Except it was L-E-N-N-O-N, okay. Which is the same, yes. So the Lennon sisters. And then my next memory. Yeah. And then my next memory is the Ed Sullivan Show, which was on Sunday nights. And, you know, Sunday was a school night because of Monday school. And once in a while, I think Ed Sullivan was on 8 to 9. And we were allowed, if we were good, to watch the Ed Sullivan Show. And these long-haired, hippie-looking guys, mop-top people came on called the Beatles straight from England. And I remember Ed Sullivan introducing them. And they came out, and I think they sung, I know they sung I Want to Hold Your Hand. And
I looked it up. They did four songs. They did I Want to Hold Your Hand. They did She Loves You and All My Lovin' and Till There Was You. Oh, and I'm sorry. All My Lovin' Till There Was You, She Loves You, and I Saw Her Standing There and I Want to Hold Your Hand. They did five songs.
Wow. I Saw Her Standing There was a good song.
Yeah, it was a great song.
It's still a good song.
All My Lovin's one of my favorites.
Yeah. So anyways, you know, and of course my sisters were going crazy, and I thought it was okay. And I remember going to school and talking to my school buddies. I was probably in the fourth or fifth grade. And, you know, and it was all the talk. It was, looking back, I now know it launched the whole British invasion of the Stones and everybody else. But I had no idea what was going on. And then I do remember, because the kids, so many of the kids were talking so much about it, that the nuns were telling us that it was we shouldn't be watching Ed Sullivan because not only did he have the Beatles on, but Elvis Presley had been on there before, and this was when Elvis Presley wasn't allowed to be shown from the waist down when he came on TV,
right?
Because he was gyrating his hips.
And that would have there would have been a lot more babies being made.
Yeah, that's right. That. Yeah,
we can't have
you know, there were a lot of women were falling out.
Oh yeah,
yeah.
And premarital sex would have been all over the place.
Yeah,
sure.
It was definitely the devil's workshop.
Can't be doing that.
So Ed Sullivan was not on the agenda. I don't really remember anything besides that, you know, yeah. Early on. I remember my mom listened to, she loved Harry Belafonte. And I actually liked him too.
Yeah.
You know, he had a great voice. And I think that I remember like Kingston Town or, you know, some.
Well, he was doing Jamaican influenced music,
yeah,
for sure.
Yeah, it was Jamaican music. It was kind of almost the beginning of the I guess the reggae intro
before that, but yeah. I mean really, yeah, ska came along in the early 60s, so yeah, you're not wrong,
right?
Do you think that, just to interject a question here, do you think your experience in making music turned you off to listening to music?
Well, I didn't think I was very good at it, and you know, and that's a very good question. I still can't sing because I don't know what makes a person tone deaf, but I'm pretty sure I am.
Okay.
And so I couldn't sing. So I would I've liked to have been a musician? Yeah. But okay. I just didn't think I had the talent for it.
Right.
And I quite honestly was very talented in some other things.
Sports.
Athletics and stuff like that. Yeah. So I just gravitated towards that because you want to do what you succeed at.
Right. That's so,
hence
the question.
Yeah.
Exactly. Yeah, I think with me it was the fact that I could play it or make some sense of it probably made me a lot more interested in listening to it.
Right.
But I also, maybe there was some, maybe you were tone deaf. Maybe you couldn't feel music or hear it in the same way most, you know, people who aren't tone deaf can. I don't know. I don't even know what tone deaf means.
I really don't either. Yeah. I think it means you can't carry a tune because you can't hear yourself.
That you can't hear the notes.
Yeah, I can't, I don't think I can hear my. Well, I know. Excuse me. I don't think I can hear myself. I know I can't. So, you know, and then any music I heard from basically up until, I don't know, I started to get close to puberty. I remember the Monkees TV show came on. It was popular.
Great show.
Well, yeah. I thought Davey was a wimp, personally.
Well, he was, yeah.
You know,
Peter was cool, though.
Yeah, Peter was cool, yeah. And Mickey was a kook.
Yeah.
You know, and I don't, who was the other one?
Davey,
Peter.
Mickey, Peter, and there was Mickey Dolenz, Peter Tork, Dave, I don't know what it is.
Davy Jones.
Uh-huh. Who was the fourth
one? I don't know. We'll have to look that up.
I feel bad for him already.
I do too.
We're really doing him a disservice here.
Yeah, because you know, out of the millions of people that are going to listen to this, he might be one of them.
He might be.
We might give him a complex.
He might be the only one listening.
I know.
Yeah.
Anyway. Yeah. So, anyways, we went from the Monkees. I didn't think much about anything else. We get it. I'm into seventh and eighth grade. I'm doing nothing but sports. I get into my ninth grade English class, and I start hearing about these hippie things out in New York, or out in San Francisco, excuse me. And, you know, I start seeing on Walter Cronkite, you know, the whole thing that was going on, Haight-Ashbury. This would have been about 65, 66, 67, somewhere in there. And my ninth grade English teacher bought some Playboys to class, and I thought, I can remember her name. Just because she bought the Playboys class. Her name was Mrs. Lund. And Mrs. Lund, if you're out there, thank you very much for bringing the Playboys to class, because even though I didn't read the Bob Dylan interview, which is what you wanted me to do, I did enjoy the illustrations.
The illustrations or the photography?
Oh, both.
Okay.
Yeah, that's what I mean.
Yeah.
Both. And I thought that was so cool. So I heard about Bob Dylan, and she played a few things, and I thought, you know, I heard his nasally like that, and I thought, what
this
the hell
terrible.
Is wrong with this
yeah,
guy?
Yeah.
You know, I thought I was bad.
Right.
So, next thing I know, I like this girl, and she wants to go out with me, and I ask her what she wants to do, and it's the summer of, this would have been, 68.
What was her name?
Judy. I'm not going to give the last
name. Judy.
And anyways, Judy wanted to go to the Denver Pop Festival, and this was 1968. And I didn't really care. I didn't necessarily want to go, but
many people would like faint hearing that now. Yeah,
I know, but I went. I went. I had my sister drive.
Yeah.
And you know, just so you know, this was a happening. There was 50,000 people there.
Yeah.
We had, you know, it was three nights. It was Big Mama Thornton, Iron Butterfly, Mothers of Invention, Three Dog Night, Creedence Clearwater, Johnny Winter, the big man Jimi Hendrix.
So nothing to get excited about.
Poco.
Really.
I know. Joe Cocker.
Wow.
Ike and Tina Turner.
Oh, my God.
And this was, I think, before Woodstock. In fact, I know it was. Woodstock was later in the summer.
Yeah, we figured that out, I think.
Yeah, it did. It happened later. So I remember the first night we were there. And I had started drinking, by the way. I wasn't getting high yet, but I'd started drinking. And I remember this one guy was dancing to Joe Cocker, but I could be wrong. And he started stripping, a long-haired hippie kind of looking guy. And then pretty soon I remember he got down to his shirt, and I said, no, he's not going to take his shirt. He took his shirt off and threw it in the crowd. And then, of course, everybody's egging him on. And then he got to his underwear, and he had some tidy whities on, and he took his tidy whities off, his skanky, I know, and he started twirling them around, and he threw them, and they landed at my feet. And I said, no way is that guy walking over here to pick that stuff up with his junk been dangling around.
Right.
So I got up and had Judy get up, and
you're how old at this time?
Ninth grade, what are you, 14?
14, yeah.
Yeah. I got up and we walked kind of to the side and let him come pick up his underwear. So that was the Denver Pop Festival. And, you know, I kind of enjoyed it. It was kind of a happening, but I wasn't a hippie yet.
It didn't. Yeah. I can't imagine watching that guy kind of made you a hippie. You probably had a few years of non-hippie.
He wasn't a good model. He wasn't a good role model.
Didn't make you want to join.
Yeah.
Or did he? I don't know.
And so what happened is that summer after the Denver Pop Festival, my parents decided they were going to move to the mountains and a geographical cure. And at that time,
What's a geographical cure?
For my dad.
Okay. Like we discussed last time.
Yeah, last time. It was the last of the geographical cures.
So he's moving the cure to get away from his drink.
Yeah, to get away from everything, and there, you know, et cetera, et cetera. And Vietnam was escalating.
Yep.
So there were two things on the news, hippies and Vietnam.
Right.
And the music kind of started to intertwine with all three or all those two things,
right.
You know, and that's when I started paying attention.
Right.
At first, I should back up. The first thing I started paying attention to was music. I did end up getting high that summer.
Okay.
And
that's,
I remember,
when you really heard music.
I really heard it. That's right, man. I was watching the fire and watching the flames dance in the fire,
uh-huh.
And they put the Grateful Dead on. Which, by the way, I know there's a lot of deadheads out there. I'm not trying to offend you. Sorry, but I just never got it. Okay. I mean, I liked them.
No, I get it.
I liked them.
It took me a long time. It wasn't until after high school,
yeah,
I started, right around high school.
It's,
but yeah.
I know that's kind of hippie heresy, but you know, it.
No, it's just deadhead heresy. A lot of hippies.
It really is, and you know, I mean, I like trucking, and I liked
a few songs,
but you know, whatever.
Yeah.
So, I go to school, and now I'm in the mountains, and the important part about the mountains, and I know I'm talking a lot, but I want to finish mine because you're going to talk a lot after this. We move up to the mountains, and a lot of the people that were moving to the mountains were Vietnam vets that were dropping out,
right,
so to speak, and they just wanted to get away.
Yeah,
you know, and I got to be friends with quite a few of them, mainly because they used to have some really good weed,
right.
And so I would hang out with them, and I got to know them, and I was starting to get scared, because now I'm 16 and 17, you know, in another year I may be going.
Right.
You know,
the draft.
Yeah, and I'm scared to death.
Right.
You know, especially with some of the stories. You know, I even had a good friend who was my age. His brother came back, and he came back, and within 2 months he took his brother and moved to Canada because he was did not want
him to go
brother to go to Vietnam. Wow. And experience what he did.
Wow.
And I don't know, but years later, that's where they settled, was in Canada.
Really?
Yeah, and a lot of people were doing that.
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah, a lot. So I was scared, and I was becoming a lot more socially conscious.
Okay.
You know, so I started listening to music when I was high, but I also started listening to lyrics. And that was, you know, I think it was 1970, I think it was. Vietnam had escalated. It was a big deal. And then Kent State happened.
That was 70.
Yep.
Was it 70?
Yep.
Okay.
And the reason I know that is because, and I, by the way, I should give Jackson State its due, but I don't like to lump the two together. That Jackson State was, there was also a shooting where two students were killed there, but that was racial. Okay. Whereas in civil rights oriented, whereas the Vietnam was, or the Kent State
was about Vietnam. Yeah.
Yeah. So, but they were both tragic.
But it was the military pulling the trigger on.
Yes. On demonstrations.
There was a problem.
Yeah.
That hadn't.
That's correct. On demonstrations.
Yeah.
And the only reason I know that it was 70 is because I was a sophomore. And I was in a journalism class, and me and another kid, I forget what they call them. They call it a certain kind of machine that used to make copies. It wasn't a copying machine, but it was blue, and it had these big and went in circle. You wouldn't know.
Yeah.
But it was essentially an old time copier.
Okay.
And we wrote up a pamphlet, just, you know, because now Abby Hoffman and the Students for Democratic Society, SDS, had come out, and we were going to start the SDS chapter at a high school, man.
So you were running copies. Was this a printing press?
No, it was, but it was like
not
a,
that old. Okay.
No, it was like a printing press, but it was in the journalism room.
Yeah.
But we made the master copy, and the master copy said, just what in the hell are you doing about Kent State and Jackson State?
Right.
And then I don't remember. I wish I'd kept a copy of
it.
Okay. But it was a one-page pamphlet.
Okay.
We run them off. We run the copies. We even had one of our friends go keep calling the front office to have the journalism teacher go to the front office, and every time that she would answer the phone, he'd hang up.
Yeah.
And then he would call right back. He was sitting out there with a roll of quarters.
Yeah.
And so he kept doing that so we could run him off. We ran him off. We snuck into the auditorium. We put him on the seats. And we just thought we were the biggest badasses that ever rolled.
We just changed the world.
Yeah, we did, man.
We ended the war.
We did. And not only that, our principal was so upset because, not because it was done, but because he couldn't find out who did it.
Right.
You know,
right.
We were like heroes. that takes me to high school. So I'm going to back off a little bit. Now music takes on a political significance to me.
Yep.
And I start listening to other artists, and now I really do like almost any music. The only music I never really got my arms around was disco. And I just, probably because it goes back to me, you know, I couldn't dance either. So I can't sing and I can't dance, you know.
Disco was not for you.
It just, disco wasn't for me. So that's what I got for my beginning to music.
Well, it's interesting that we talked about this before, and like to what extent music changed the world back in those days in particular. And the conversation was, did it really? You know, did anything change? And I think that particular time in history is one of the most interesting of all, because to me, that's where the schism occurred. That's where kids were suddenly no longer liking the same music as their parents.
That's correct.
Back in the 40s, it was Doris Day and Who's That Puppy in the Window, and right. so on. And the kids were, I don't know if they loved it or not, but they sure looked like it on television.
Right.
And it wasn't until rock and roll. I mean, 50s really, but the 60s, you had, you know, the parents and their kids listening to different music. Then Vietnam came along and just carved a line right in the middle. I'm not saying all parents were against or for the Vietnam War, and I'm not saying all kids were against it, but by and large, that seemed like the lay of the land.
You are correct. However, what stopped, and we can get into the Vietnam War, but I really don't want to because I get sad when I think about it, because on so many fronts,
yeah.
I think of the kids that were coming back that had been over there. And I mean, these are kids my age,
yeah.
You know, I was young for my grade. So,
and they came back changed.
And they, without exception.
Right.
Without exception, there was, and you know, having people, and I was never one of them. I did march against the war,
yeah.
But I was never one that was into the baby killer kind of, you know, calling
right,
the soldiers
right.
or anything like that.
You didn't
I just
blame the soldiers.
I always
yeah.
felt just horrible for these kids,
yeah,
and because I knew it could be me, you know?
Yeah, and they didn't know why they were there.
They had no clue.
Most people in the
no
country
clue.
Didn't know why we were there.
They had
there.
No clue, and that's why, you know. One of my, he became like a big brother to me, Gary. Gary and Ellen, if you're out there, I know you're not probably, but he was a visual tracker, which is fancy words for you're the first one out on patrol.
Right.
And he said he was from a small town in Texas. He never ever thought about getting high until he got to Vietnam. And then once he got high, he said it was the only way he could even get through the day.
Right.
It's just being stoned the whole time.
Right.
You know, the whole tour that he was in Vietnam.
I would imagine.
You know,
yeah.
and he said that was true of a lot of the kids. And you know, then we had the opium and heroin too.
Right.
There were kids coming back completely addicted.
Right.
And maimed, you know.
Yeah.
So it was a very tumultuous time.
Yeah.
But back to what you were saying about the schism.
Yeah.
It was around this time that a lot of the adults were starting to turn against the
Vietnam.
War as
okay.
well.
Okay.
Because they were seeing, it was becoming up close and personal to them.
Right.
You know?
So it wasn't just pent up married people trying to get some from the,
no,
the
no,
whole love no. revolution. They were actually against
yeah.
the war.
Yeah.
Our kids were coming back in body bags.
Yeah, yeah. Right. And my mom and we had discussions. I still to this day need braces. Now, I don't know if this is true or not. If it's an actual deferment, if it was an actual deferment back then, if you had braces, they couldn't draft you. But my mom seemed to think it was because every kid in the house got braces but me.
Right.
I still need them. you know, but so the parents, once the parents and the general public started to turn again, that's when Nixon started secretly bombing Cambodia and Laos because it wasn't popular to doing everything else.
Right.
But the schism did dissipate to the point that almost every rational human being
was against
the war.
Yeah.
What I had a particular problem with even then was us just totally abandoning the South Vietnamese
just
people.
Just walking right out
right. after we propped them up.
Right.
And I'm not, granted, most 17-year-old kids weren't worried about that and maybe didn't, but I always loved current events, so I watched that stuff.
Right.
In fact, I used to ditch school, as an aside, and go watch trials in Denver. I loved to watch trials.
Wow.
You know, and my mom would let me.
Yeah.
You know, she let me stay home and watch the Watergate hearings.
Right.
You know, those kind of things. So I really, really was, I think, fairly in tune with the political times. So, but I do digress. I'm, you know, after that, you know, we had Lennon coming out with Pieces, Give Peace a Chance, Crosby, Stills, Nash & Young, Ohio. We already talked about Fortunate Son in the last, you know, the Creedence Clearwater song.
Yeah.
And so a lot of the songs are about Vietnam.
Yeah. Well, there's a lot of the, yeah, there was a lot of political. That's really out of the folk scene that was going on in Greenwich Village and New York and everything. Political music before that was, I don't know. Was it a thing at all? I don't think there was much of it. I mean, you could go back to the 30s. Billie Holiday wrote the song Strange Fruit. To me, one of the most powerfully political songs ever written. It's about lynching. Doesn't this tree bear strange fruit? But it was very, that was banned originally.
Yeah, that's almost, you know what, and I hate to say this, I'm sure when that song came out, that White Bread America
was not ready.
Was probably thinking she was talking about orange trees.
Oh, I'm sure of that. You know, I'm sure of that.
You know, I mean, it was almost like back in the
talking about a pomegranate tree or something.
Yeah. Like back in the day on the plantations, you know, that's, as you know, we should talk about this. I just thought about this. You know, the Negro spirituals was their own language. It was their code.
Right.
That's how they communicated.
Right.
And, you know, so that's pretty significant.
Right.
You know,
huge.
I mean,
talk about music, you know, and needing it. Imagine in those times being in that situation and, you know, you were drug, you know, we're talking about drugs helping you through a day in Vietnam. I imagine music was their saving grace in that situation. I can't speak from experience, obviously. I know nothing about it, but I can imagine. And then, like you're saying, it wasn't just an escape. It wasn't just for enjoyment. It was code. It was language. It was how they communicated.
Yeah. And even on the ships coming over, I show there was a miniseries you probably don't remember because it was after your time, called Roots.
I remember Roots.
I used to show that every, you know, at the end of the year is movie time for teachers.
Oh, okay.
You know, because you've done all your tests and you've done all your things, and as long as you could intertwine it into the curriculum,
you could show it.
And there was a couple movies, but the series and the kids loved it. Kuna Kinte.
Yeah.
Man, they just absolutely loved it.
Great.
And but I don't know why I was talking about that, but there was the reason. Oh, I know why. Because there was in that when they were on the plantations, it showed them singing their songs and how they were communicating.
Right.
And speaking of communicating, Brian, we've definitely talked about the influence of music on my life. So get ready, Brian. The next podcast we have on music, which will be in the next one or two, we're going to be talking about the influence it had on your life.
Oh, boy. Okay, that's going to be a big one, but I'm ready. So, till then.
I'm Boomer.
And I'm X.
Over.
And out.